Call HSS to order at this time. We have four members present. We have Senator Dyson, Senator Passman, Vice Chair, Senator Ellis, and myself, Betty Davis. We do have a bill, Senate Bill 96, and I'm going to have that bill come before us at this time. We have not heard it before. We'll give the overview on it, maybe take some testimony if there's anybody online to testify. This is something that the division has asked for, so we're not taking any action on it today, but we will begin. And I have my aide to come and give the overview of the bill. Okay? Will you state your name for the record?
Certainly. I'm Linda Zog, and I'm Senator Davis's aide. And if I may just read the sponsor statement into the record. In July of 2008, the federal government issued new medical support regulations that required states to have guidelines addressing how either or both parents will provide for a child's health care needs through accessible health insurance coverage, cash, medical support, or both. Under the federal regulations, the state must order either or both parents to purchase reasonably priced, affordable, accessible health insurance coverage, provide cash medical support, or both. Cash medical support may be required in those cases where no reasonably priced health insurance coverage is accessible to the child. If a parent is ordered to pay cash medical supports, the Child Support Services Division may enforce the ongoing cash medical support obligation as well as collect any cash medical support arrears. Failure to satisfy these mandates jeopardizes $17 million in federal funding for the state's child support programs. Alaska's request for a waiver was denied by the federal government in January of 2009. This bill adds to existing law the authority for a tribunal to order either or both parents to pay cash medical support if warranted. In addition, the bill directs CSSD to review child support orders for modification on a federally mandated three-year cycle. The bill adds cash medical support to the definition of arrears and the definition of support orders, thereby enabling CSSD to use its existing enforcement tools to collect a cash medical support obligation on behalf of the child. Finally, the bill removes the language limiting who may request the correction of a clerical mistake in an administrative order or request the vacation of an administrative order based on default income. This bill puts Alaska in compliance with federal regulations or requirements. As explained above, this bill will assure Alaska's children receive the medical support to which they are entitled.
That completes the statement.
It does, Senator.
And we do have people from the CSSD here, do we? Would you like to come forward at this time and give us why this is important that we bring this bill before us? Is there anyone else to come up at the same time as you are?
Yes. Yes, for the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell, and I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Revenue. And I'm here to help coordinate some of the answers between the group of folks that we have at the Anchorage LIO calling in. John Maloney is the Director of Child Support Services Division, and he's there to give you an overview of the bill and explain how it does impact the state and why it's necessary. Stacy Steinberg is an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and she specializes in some of the federal compliance areas of the bill, as well as Leroy Lotta, who's also an Assistant Attorney General with Department of Law. And so if we can turn it over to John Maloney, he can give us an overview of the bill.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So are you there, John?
Okay.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, so we do.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm the director of the Child Support Enforcement Program that I'm child support is federally mandated state operated program that will govern about 66% of the funding of the program. In order to secure this funding, the state must comply with the requirements of the Social Security Act and federal regulations at 45 CFR 300-310. Failure to meet these requirements will put at risk funding for the child support program. The funding amount is approximately $17 million per year. This bill addresses the areas where the state statute requires changes to meet federal requirements to ensure continued federal funding for the child support program. Recognizing that the child support program efforts to secure the support medical workforce has had limited success, Congress enacted the Child Support Performance Incentive Act in 1998. This act directs the establishment of the medical support workforce. This working group includes 30 members representing federal and state child support programs, employers, payroll professionals, group health plans, and children's advocates. The working group report was delivered to Congress in 2000. In July of 2008, in response to several of the working group's key recommendations, the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement issued new medical regulations. These regulations require states to have guidelines addressing how either or both parents will provide for a child's health care needs, for accessible health insurance coverage, cash medical support, or both. Under federal regulations, states must order either or both parents to purchase reasonably priced accessible health insurance coverage, state medical and cash support, or both. While insurance coverage is preferred, cash medical support may be required in those cases where no reasonable health insurance coverage is available. If a parent is to pay cash medical support, the Child Support Services Division must enforce the ongoing cash medical support obligation as well as collect any cash and medical support appearance. This bill adds to existing law the authority to order either of the parents to cash medical support. While meeting federal requirements, it also assures that children receive the medical support to which they are entitled. Another area involves modification, review and modification of support orders. FSD clients can request a review at any time. If no request is made, CFSD currently does not perform a review. Current federal regulations require the state to have procedures under which child support orders must be reviewed and, if appropriate, modified at least every 3 years. This bill requires the agency to perform the reviews in compliance with the review cycle. However, this in no way limits our clients to request a review at any time. CFSD has an automated system that collects the income data of the parties in each case. Once a year, performs a calculation to determine if the case meets the criteria for modification. It appears that modification criteria are met. Notice is sent to both parties informing them that a modification may be warranted. In addition to these federal required provisions, the bill also removes the language limiting who may request the correction of a clerical mistake in an administrative child support order, or who may request the vacation of administrative order based upon default income. Currently, in both situations, only the office clerk can request these actions. That concludes my testimony. I'd be available for questions.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is Stacy Steinberg, are you going to speak to the bill also?
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm just here to answer any legal questions that might arise today or any questions by the committee members.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody there present with you that need to speak to the bill, or are they just here to answer questions?
I would like to speak.
And would you state your name for the record and who you represent?
My name is Dana L. Olson, and for the record, I'm opting out of your proceedings, and I have a number of reasons why. Today, I am here to give you notice that under the claim of privilege under national defense law, this issue is not reviewable. And I also wanted to say that the state is subject to the 13th Amendment dictating slavery, and that issue is already in federal courts. I also wanted to say that I believe it's House Bill 645 allows each state to adopt sovereignty, so I'm going to dispute the testimony of the agency, because in Montana they did adopt and claim their own state sovereignty, so there is no connectivity alleged by the agency. I need to explain that I also have spoke to Senator Davis concerning the issue of modification, and that I don't feel I need to go into that again, but I deny that the agency ever offered that as a component before I got injured and I was enrolled in state job training. And so the issue of modification brings up the Constitution, Article 1, Section 15, prohibited state action. No law impairing the obligation of contracts and no law making any irreparable grant of special privilege or immunity shall be passed. No conviction shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture of the state, that is in the Alaska Constitution. I wanted to say that this bill seems to be a component of the UN dictate on that of the child, which gives children actually more rights than their parents, and I claim that this is a badges of slavery. Parents have a right to withhold the issue, because the Supreme Court in my case said that issue resolved between the parents and not the agency, and to come back and try to change that would be to violate the integrity of the Supreme Court interpreting the Constitution. I'm concerned that this bill fails to consider that when people enroll in job training, that there's a deficiency under the state labor laws, there's unfair labor practices ongoing, all those sort of things, but it's what I said to the agency before: if you have the capacity to enforce, then you have the enforcement to not enforce. And I don't see a attachment to this bill showing the financial costs of enforcement, which is a deficiency under statutory construction, because the Department of Air Force brought me up to Alaska and used a military home of record in another state where I nor he was a resident of the state. So they brought me up here for 30 years and supported me. And I got my property interests under national security. My rights arose under national security. And to enforce upon me, it takes away my privilege as a parent to wait until my children are grown to resolve some of my property issues that need to be addressed.
Mrs. Olson?
Not in need.
Ms. Olson?
Yes.
Are you sure that you're speaking to Senate Bill 96?
Yes, I am.
I don't follow you, and you say that you had discussed this with me before.
Yes, I did. I brought up the federal poverty standard and the fact that I am exempted because of my age from job referral, and yes, I did bring that up to you, and you said it wouldn't change.
That's
the quote to me was.
Mrs. Olson?
Yes.
The Senate Bill 96 has just been introduced to me since I've been down here, and I have not spoke to anyone by this.
Your office in the late 2008.
Yeah, and that was a different matter altogether. And I just wondered if you were confused about the bill that we have before us.
No, because in order to adopt the federal poverty guidelines, I've already given the commissioner of that department the standard that in order to do it, I would have the right to challenge the federal poverty guidelines in Alaska, because the state has not consented to be sued in federal court. And so Rule 90.3 really wasn't in effect when I got my order. The judge said I would work multiple jobs, and under labor law, there's no redressability for me. He told me I would work two jobs, and he didn't care. I would work those two jobs, and if I got hurt, it didn't matter. The agency continued to enforce against
Mrs. Olson?
Yes, ma'am.
I would like for you to wrap up your testimony, and if you have other things that you need to give in writing, you may do that. At this time, I'm going to ask somebody from the Vision to speak to what your concern is, because I do not follow this at all, so I'm quite confused.
Why did you say that I sent down written testimony?
I don't have the written testimony. If it is here and someone would provide it to us, I'll see that everybody gets it, but no, we don't have it.
May I finish my last sentence?
You may finish your last sentence if you're going to wrap up your testimony at that time.
Yes. And what I wanted to say is that TRICARE covers all the members of the family, including whether it was custody, or, you know, the person who has custody or not. But in my case, the only reason I was denied custody was because my house got damaged under the Miller's Reach fire, and my trailer got blown up by the National Guard. And so since I can't address these things, then I would say that you can't address them on me.
All right, are you through with your testimony at that point?
Well, at this point, I'd like to say that I wanted to reiterate that I'm opting out because of the fact that other states have exercised and passed their sovereignty under House Bill 645, and I am claiming right of privilege under national defense.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. Would somebody from the department or division please... I think we have somebody from the Attorney General's office is online there.
Madam
Department
Chair,
of Law.
Madam Chair, this is Stacey Steinberg. I am from the Department of Law.
Okay.
And I'm here to answer any legal questions that might come up with this bill.
You're here to answer the legal question with this bill, but what I'm totally confused with the testimony that came before us. We're addressing an issue that I didn't think what she's talking about has anything to do with this bill. I want somebody from the division to say that I'm correct, and so we can direct her into the right place, because as far as I can see, that does not have anything to do with this bill that's before me.
Madam Chair, this
yes.
is John Malley. I listened to the lady's testimony, and she has left the room at this time. I don't see where this applies to this bill or child support in any manner or shape.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any wrap up that you'd like to give us on the bill while we have it before us?
Madam Chair, no, unless someone has questions.
Is there anybody on the committee have questions with 96 based upon the changes that you see before you? But before we get to that discussion, I see that we have a CS before us, and I didn't ask for its adoption. Would somebody please sit the pass fan? Would you do that?
Sure. I would move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 96, identified as 26-LS0485/E, be brought before the Health and Social Services Committee.
Thank you. So if we're going to discuss that, will somebody just make an objection so we may do that at this point?
Object.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this bill from the members?
Madam
any
Chair.
Questions or statements? Yes.
Yeah, thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Dyson?
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking at the sponsor statement. I want to be clear that this is true. About the second or third sentence down, it says, under federal regulations, states must order either or both parents to purchase reasonably priced health care insurance.
We have that there because we have gotten that from the division, and if they want to speak to that, they can. And if there's a correction that need to be in the sponsor statement, we can do that.
Well, I just want
to
make...
Would you be able to speak to it, or would it be somebody that's online?
Director Maloney would be able to speak to that.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, this is John Maloney.
Yes.
Through the chair to Senator Dyson, Could you repeat your question, please?
Yes. Does the federal government regulations say that one or both of the parents must provide health care insurance?
Through the chair, that is correct.
So it
not only does the regulation, but 42 U.S. Code does also.
So a financially capable parent who wanted to pay their own bills and not have health insurance would not be able to do so?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson. No, sir. What happens is that the regulation calls for there to either be procure insurance at a reasonable cost. If no insurance is available, then they would end up paying additional funds in the way of a medical cash medical support award. If they have insurance available to them, they may purchase the insurance, and it's covered just as it currently is in our statutes and regulation. They get credit if it's an additional cost for purchasing insurance up to 50% of the cost of the insurance.
So I think I understood what you said, but it should have seemed to me you should have said yes, that the federal regulations say that a person can't be self-insured for health for the children.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I believe that if the question is, can a person elect not to get insurance and in place take medical support, cash medical support, that I don't believe would be okay, because the way the regulation is written, the preferable method is insurance, and insurance is required if it's purchased, if it's capable of being purchased at a reasonable cost through the employer.
Mr. Malady, I believe, and I want the senator to say that, but what I thought he was trying to address was the fact that there might be somebody able to pay the cash themselves, not asking for assistance from any public agents to cover it for them, that they would not be allowed to do that. They have to have the insurance. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's the question. If they didn't have insurance, but they were able to pay it by cash, their own money, would they be able to do that?
Out of chair, yes, they would.
All right. I think that's what he was looking for.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And if I may continue, and thank you for both understanding my question and getting it clarified. So the sentence that says states must order either or both parents to purchase reasonably priced accessible health insurance, it should have said, or provide cash medical support.
Senator Dyson, you're probably correct now that you make that clarification. And this is in a sponsor statement. It can be removed from the statement, or we can make the correction on the statement.
Yeah. And in response, I don't care really what the sponsor statement says, as long as it accurately reflects as long as we understand what the law says, or the and so on. And I think we've got that clear, at least
yes,
according to the testimony.
We do.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
I have another question, and this might be a better one for Ginger, and it's more of a practical thing. I am dealing with a case of the non-custodial parent who has a court order regularly changed jobs, and may indeed be kind of working in the underground economy. I'm sure you've never heard of any non-custodial parent doing that. But this person that I'm referring to then fairly regularly gets an order from the state saying, your ex-spouse now has health insurance, and you've been getting this medical support, cash medical support money for a couple of months, and we're not going to give it to you anymore. In fact, we're going to deduct for the past. And then the non-custodial parent disappears from the job, but it's months before the record keeping and all that catches up, and so the custodial parent regularly misses 5 or 6 months of the cash medical support, and it's a huge hassle. Is that an unusual circumstance? Is there any way we can fix that hassle for these poor custodial parents?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think Director Melanie probably deals with those types of issues on a fairly regular basis. And
you'd prefer he answer.
If he would like to answer, he can talk to you certainly about the time frame that it would take to adjust a court order.
Thank you very much. Senator Dyson, since it does not directly deal with the bill that's before us, I would prefer, now that you got the question out there, that they get back with you on the answer.
Sure.
They want to share it with my committee. I don't have any problem with that, but I do not want to take any more time up on that particular question at this time.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or concerns, statements to be made? Is there anyone else to testify on Senate Bill CS 96?
Madam Chair, this is John Mallory again.
Yes.
Since you did move that CS, I do
yes.
have a little more testimony on the addition that was put into the CS.
All right. I didn't understand that. I thought you had completed. You may continue. You may continue.
Thank you. The other area that's included in the CS is the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, UIFSA. The purpose of the act is to provide efficient procedures to collect child support in interstate cases and to eliminate multiple support orders that were permitted under previous child support law. 1995, Alaska enacted a version of the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act that contained a different definition of state than contained in the Uniform Act. The following year, 1996, Congress passed legislation that mandated the states adopt the Uniform Act to be eligible to continue receiving federal funding for their child support programs. In Alaska's Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, the definition of state does not include two entities that are included in the Uniform Act. These two entities are the United States Virgin Islands and an Indian tribe. This bill would eliminate these differences by incorporating these two entities into the Alaska Uniform Interstate Family Support Act statute. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes your testimony?
Yes, ma'am, it does.
All right, thank you very much. We've had an overview of the CS that's before us. Is there anyone in the audience that came to testify on 96? Is there anyone else online that came to testify on 96? SB 96. Here none. Are there any other comments to be made by the members of the committee?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Dyson?
Yeah. Having gotten pretty involved in this child support issues over the years I've been here, I just wonder, is there any, well, I worry that we inadvertently are doing something here that some advocacy group will be frustrated by. Is there anything we're doing here that could be perceived to be against the interest of any of the interested parties?
Senator Dyson, is a broad question, but I don't know if the division wanted to speak to that. I know there were some concerns about the original bill that we had, and we did make the adjustment through the CS. I haven't spoke with one of the senators here that introduced Senate Bill 46. I don't know if there are and we've had this out there long enough for anybody that had any opposition to this bill or concern about it to actually speak to it. I don't plan to take any action on this bill today. So there would be still chance for someone to speak to this bill. When I bring it back, I'm going to bring it back under bills previously heard, unless my committee come up with other reason as to why this bill should not move out of my committee. That would be my desire to move it at the next time I bring it forward. And of course, I'll always listen to any comments that are being made about this bill or encourage anyone to write or email or do whatever they want to do to speak to this bill during the time that we have. Now, if the department or division want to say anything about the question that he asks, feel free to do so.
Yeah, this is Ginger Blaisdell from the Department of Revenue. And I just wanted to say the bill was introduced a couple of weeks ago. We have not received any negative comment, and we have met with each of your offices and other offices on this bill and have not received any negative comment.
Yeah, and if I might,
yes,
and respectfully to you, Madam Chair, the thought that all of the custodial parents out there who are living off of the court in child payments, the thought that all of them know that what we're doing here or even paying attention, I think is naive. And as I talked with Ginger the other day, my office is hearing far less from the group that used to call themselves Mad Dads or We Ain't Gonna Take It No More or some of those sorts of things. I'm hearing far less than I used to 10 years ago, which I think is to the credit of the department and, you know, and so on and so forth. But I worry sometimes that we will take an action and there's something that appears to us minor in our naivety that there'll end up being somebody, you know, that's disadvantaged or thinks they are. And so the fact we haven't heard any criticism doesn't surprise me at all. It's like, you know, you look at the pages of legal notices in the back of the paper and some guy's losing all of his property, you know, because he wasn't every day reading all of those. I'm glad you're giving us some time, and I'm hoping that if indeed there are somebody out there that thinks they're going to be injured or an advocacy group, that they get a hold of us before we do something we didn't know we were doing. Thank you.
All right, you're quite welcome. At this time, I'm going to close the discussion on this bill, and we will pick it up at bills previously heard at a later time. Thank you.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
I assume that when you said that, you didn't mean that we couldn't have some discussion that when we take it up again.
Oh, no. Okay, you have time to contact my office between now and the time that it comes back. And, of course, you can always bring something up when we bring the bill back to us.
Yeah.
If there's possible amendments or whatever you want to have, they will be taken under consideration at that time.
Yeah. And what I would recommend is that you say something like, we're going to set the bill aside, as opposed to saying we're closing the discussion. But given your attitude, it's great. Thank you.
We will set the bill aside at this time if that's preferable to you.
Thank you.
All right? We're going to go now to the original bill that we was going to hear. We've heard this bill twice already, and I hope that we're going to be able to take some action on it. Senator Ellis, are you going to have your staff speak, or are you going to speak first?
Yes, Madam Chair, if we could ask Mr. Hensley to come to the table. I know before the bill moved at the last hearing, there was a request by the committee for some information, and we have that for you now.
All right, thanks.
For the record, my name is Max Hensley, staff to Senator Ellis. In the last meeting, the committee had asked to hear some data regarding potential increments in the health and social services budget that would cover an immediate increase in the rates paid to home community-based providers. In the original fiscal note for Senate Bill 32, the department outlined what those increments would cost. An immediate increase for fiscal year 10 of 2.8% for the home and community-based waiver services, which would be equivalent to the home health agency inflation factor, which the department feels is the most similar inflation factor, would cost $3.9 million in the current year's budget. So I hope that answers the question that the committee had posed. If there's others, I would be happy to answer them at this time.
All right, Senator Ellis, do you have any comment to make at this time? That was the only request that we'd asked for the information on it. We do have that information before us now.
Oh, and Madam Chair, just to let you know, I copied you on a memo that I sent to the Hess Finance Subcommittee, chaired by Senator Olson, with that information, in case the subcommittee wanted to consider that.
So. Yes. Didn't everybody get a copy of that letter on my committee also, did they not? And so that's something that we hope that we'll be able to take up, and that would be a source of fund for Senate Bill 32. Any other discussion on 32? Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I think the administration has some reservations about it. Are passing it, and I guess I'd like to hear an update from them.
Actually, the administration did not have some concerns about it. They was concerned that we do something. They wanted that delay, 2-year delay. So we agreed, that I think the compromise that they agreed that that's going to take place. And then Senator Ellis and his staff worked on it and looked at it and found out there might be another source of funds so that we would be able to come up with money to give to some of the grantees sooner than 2 years.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Needless to say, the fiscal aspects of the bill will be discussed in the Finance Committee.
Yes.
But the things that were directly related to HES Committee purview, we've tried to grapple with here. So the conversation will, yes, continue in Finance, I'm sure, on the money aspect.
Senator Dyson? And okay. There, we also have the people, well, I know the people that were in here are not online, not here in the room anymore, but there might be somebody online if you had a statement to make.
Madam Chair, John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services. In the last hearing, we did testify. We still had concerns with some of the language around rate setting and the implications. I think the department is willing to take those up in this committee or the Finance Committee at the pleasure of the legislature. But we have worked with the committee and the sponsor to try and come to accommodation on a number of issues, and we're comfortable with the progress we're making.
All right, thank you, Mr. Sherwood. And what I hear you saying is that you did have a compromise situation with the sponsor of this bill, and that you are satisfied to the point that if there's further things to be taken up, you're willing to take it up at the next committee? Because if you had a concern, you did not share it with me, so I just assume that the information that has been given to me is true. Would you not agree?
That's absolutely correct. We've put all our concerns on the record before this committee.
Yes. What is the pleasure of the committee on this particular bill at this time?
Yeah. I would move that we pass out of this committee the CS for Senate Bill 32 with individual recommendations and the, I believe, revised fiscal note. Is that?
What's in the bill? I guess you would be able to say that. I guess, would we say that is that way, Senator?
With fiscal notes.
With fiscal
notes. They get updated.
Because they were
in
not.
Every committee. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. With fiscal note.
All right. Individual recommendation with the attached fiscal note that you have. Any objection? Hearing no objection, then it will be moved to Finance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That completes our agenda for today.
Is it? What about 35?
Oh, we have another bill.
Yes.
Excuse me. We do have another bill. 35. Where is it? I'll just look on my binder. On the outside of it. Sorry, staff, we do have that the bill to come back before us, and it's a bill that's been previously heard also. 47, 35, 35. Everybody have a copy of the 35?
Yes.
And this bill was to come back to us for action at this time also. I don't know if we have anybody here that's here to testify on SB 35. I see that Pat's in the audience. You're just here for questions, or are you?
I'm here for questions, Madam Chair.
Okay. I see a hand over there. Excuse me, but I can't make out who you are.
Diane Castell from the department. And I'm here to, should I come up?
Would you come forward, please?
Diane Casto, Department of Health and Social Services. And where we left the bill the last time is the Suicide Prevention Council was going to be meeting on February 4th and 5th, and we're going to be coming forward with some recommendations for changes to the membership that had been a part of the legislative audit, that we may want to tweak some of the membership language. And the council did come up with those recommendations. I believe they were passed on to your office. And so I am here if anyone has questions and about those changes.
Yes.
Or the recommendations that the council is making.
Okay, so we do have a CS before us, and all members have a copy of the CS. The recommendation has been incorporated in the new CS.
Great.
Would we bring this up, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that we bring before the committee CS for Senate Bill 35, identified 26 LS0229/R.
Hearing no objection, they were ready for the discussion on the bill. You do have the changes in front of you. The department agreed that this is what their recommendation was, and that was the only concern that came before us. And if everything is fine at this time, I'm ready for a motion to move Senate Bill 35 out of my committee.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think I missed when you were here before, and I see Pat's here. And Pat, you don't need to come up, but if you had recommendations in your audit, I would enjoy your addressing us if that's permissible, Madam Chair.
It's fine.
Madam Chair, before we get to that point, I'm confused on procedure. Senator Passavant just moved to bring the committee substitute before us. Do you consider that adopting the committee substitute? Is that what we just did?
I did.
Okay. So when you say bring it before us, you're adopting it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's President Vaughn.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. In response to Senator Dyson's question, through the chair, Senator Dyson, as the only recommendation that we made that would involve any statutory changes is indeed the composition of the commission, of the council, excuse me. We found that they had difficulty establishing quorums and filling positions. The last time we did the audit, we just encouraged the governor's office to make more timely appointments, continued to have the same problems, looked at it again, and thought this time they really did need to modify their requirements for being on the council. And so, yes, those changes would be, while we didn't recommend anything in particular, we did want to see the council and the legislature work together to find those interested people that are willing to serve on the council.
And if I may,
yes.
And what we have before us reflects a good response to that recommendation from your office.
Through the chair, if it's acceptable to the council and the legislature, then yes, it'll be fine.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
yes.
And Linda, generally speaking, when we have these renewal things for all the boards and commissions and so on and so forth, I would enjoy a copy of, you know, what the audit office has provided as part of our backup material when that happens. And maybe you guys already supplied that to me and I missed it. I've been missing a lot here lately. All right.
Actually, I'm not sure where that was provided to you or not. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. If there's audits that's been done, I'll make sure that it is in the package the next time.
Yeah, and I think it's almost automatic.
And besides
isn't it?
That, she was here the last time and she would have been able to speak to it. But if you want the written information, it can be put in the package.
And I think that's a part of our procedure.
I have no problem with that.
No, I understand that. But I think it's a part of the renewal under our law requires the ledge audit to do that. So it will happen most of the time, I think.
And every time they have an audit, all that information is sent to us. So we do have it. But for this committee, But since we are bringing those bills up, I agree that it would be nice to have that information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, actions be taken at this point? All right. Senator Brassband?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that we pass out of this committee the CS for Senate Bill 35 with individual recommendations and with fiscal note.
Any objection? Hearing no objection, this bill is moved out of committee. Now we are through with our agenda for today, and I appreciate all of you being here, and thanks very much. We'll adjourn at this time. It's now 2:15.